The BBC presents Gordon Jackson in The Same River Twice, a serial thriller in 8 parts by Edward Boyd. Johnny Maxson has returned to Scotland at the request of his mother-in-law, who asks him to search for his estranged wife, Julia, missing for 3 months. He goes to his wife's flat where he finds a girl, Sandra Bailey, dead from an overdose of sleeping pills. He learns that she was the girlfriend of an old acquaintance, Tom Armstrong. Suddenly, in the flat, the phone rings. The Same River Twice, Part 3.
Hello?
Could this be Tom Armstrong?
And if it was?
Can you hear your doorbell ringing?
Just a minute. Yeah. Yeah, I hear it ringing now.
Two friends of mine.
What's on their minds?
They're going to kill you.
Through the door's reed glass, I could see the two shapes fusing together, then separating liquidly. The one thing they never grew was smaller. Whoever hired them bought his violence and bulk.
You Tom Armstrong?
No.
Don't give us a patter. We know you.
Then why ask who I am?
We were told we'd find Tom Armstrong here.
Your information was wrong.
He's bluffing, Joey.
Shut up, Patsy.
Nervous apprentice you've got there, Joey.
You watch your mouth, mate. And what's the matter with you, Joey? Getting soft or something?
Now, fair's fair, Patsy. We don't want to lean in the wrong block.
Apart from that, it's bad economics.
Huh?
You came here to beat up Tom Armstrong. You beat up the wrong man. That means you've got to find the right man and do the job all over again. And that means you've done 2 jobs for the price of one. In other words, half the profit.
Talk.
It makes sense to me, Patsy. Look, if you're not Tom Armstrong, then who are you then?
Johnny Maxson.
Prove it.
Passport good enough?
Oh, well, let's see it.
Here you are.
You know, he's late enough, Patsy.
I'd like to do him anyhow.
Oh, Patsy, that's not a very professional attitude.
I couldn't agree with you more, Joey. Come in and have a cup of tea or something.
Here, I can go a cup of tea.
Come on in, then. And shut the door.
Here, now, don't go in the huff, Patsy. I mean, you've got to do the right thing.
You're a big soft Nelly. That's what you are.
Yeah. A nice place you've got here, sir. I'm
glad you like it.
Is that a Picasso you got there?
I wish it was.
Slice into it, Patsy.
If Venus de Milo seen it, he would turn in his grave.
The kitchen's in there.
Make the tea, Patsy.
Oh, now listen, you
are. Make the tea, Patsy.
Aye. All right.
A big bundle of fun, your partner.
He can't help it. He comes from a broken home.
I can just see him breaking it. Who sent you here, Joey?
What can I tell you that, sir?
I treat it as classified information.
Now, that's not a point.
What is the point, then?
Me and Patsy, like, we're kind of sort of like businessmen.
Demolishers?
Aye, well, if you like, you know. Anyway, like every other businessman, we've got to build up goodwill. And if we go about shopping your customers, next thing we'll have no customers to shop.
Point taken. But there's no law against me guessing, is there?
Oh, guess away.
Would your customer's name be Bailey?
Here. Are you sure you're not Tom Armstrong?
Look, we've been through all that.
Well, guesses like that bother me.
It wasn't a guess.
What was it then?
About 4 hours ago, I found a dead girl in this flat, in the bedroom next door.
Here, what are you trying to guess?
She was identified as Sandra Bailey.
Somebody did her in?
Herself. She was pregnant.
Well, I knew that.
But you didn't know she was dead.
No. God rest her soul.
Somebody knew she was in trouble and sent you along to take it out of the character responsible.
Oh, you're near enough.
I figured it might be her brother or her father.
Oh, well, you figured wrong.
Boyfriend?
Here. Have the cops been here?
Place was swarming with them.
Who's in charge?
An Inspector Wardlaw.
Oh, Mike the Knife!
Is that what you call him?
Aye.
The boyfriend's waiting outside, isn't he?
Well, I suppose he is.
Why didn't he come to the party?
He's got his reasons.
I'd like to talk to him.
Well, I'll tell him. After that, it's up to him.
Tea's ready if you are.
Forget it.
What do you mean, forget it?
We're blowing.
After me sweating away through that...
Patsy, be nice.
Well, that's all right for you. You don't have to make...
Do you know this Armstrong character?
Yes.
But where do we get him?
I can't tell you.
You mean you can't? You mean you don't want to?
I mean I can't. I'm out of touch. I've been living abroad for 5 years.
What do you do for a living?
We used to have a small wholesale business. Ebenezer Armstrong and Son, novelty goods.
I suppose it'll be in the book.
You're still going through with it?
I'd do it for nothing new.
Not a very professional attitude, Joey.
Well, sometimes you need a day off. Come on, Patsy.
They went off. And I thought how wonderful, how charming, how delightful and conducive to a gracious way of life not to be Tom Armstrong. They would get him. And when they were finished with him, he would never be the same again. The outside door had been left open, which meant to the initiated that Patsy and Joey had been born in a field. I left it open, wondering if he would come, and if Joey would tell him, and would it fall to me, and stuff like that. He'd been there for some time before he registered. He looked about 19, pale, medium height and slim, a young Old Testament face fringed with beard. His eyes knew he had never won, and never would win anything ever. His left leg explained the hard men he had hired. It was shriveled, twisted. Polio.
Joey said you wanted to see me.
That's right.
All right, here I am. Start talking.
You nearly got me beaten up tonight.
Maybe you deserved it.
Who doesn't? Make that your criteria, and every hospital in the country will be sleeping three in a bed.
What are you, a Christian or something?
Listen, Sonny, the kind of toughness you aspire to needs two good legs.
That was a rotten thing to say.
It's called shock therapy. Now stop being John Wayne and maybe we'll get somewhere.
You shouldn't have said that about my leg.
I know. I apologize.
What is it you want?
Didn't Joey tell you?
He said you wanted to see me. He said he thought I should.
Oh, man. Did you have a name?
Alistair Dodds.
I've got bad news for you, Alistair.
Bad news and me are buddies.
Oh, for Pete's sake. It's about Sandra.
Sandra who?
Sandra Bailey.
Never heard of her.
Then it won't break your heart if she's dead.
It's not true. It's not true. It's not true.
She's dead.
No.
I tell you, she's dead. Oh, man, why do you have to suffer? Why do you have to do everything the hard way? Why?
He killed her.
She killed herself.
He killed her.
Have it your own way. Morally, you may be right. Either way, she's just as dead. Would you like to talk about it?
What is there to talk about?
I'll lead you. She'd been your girlfriend, right?
Yes.
Till Armstrong came on the scene.
A balloon. That's what he is. A balloon. Fancy car, posh accent.
A doll who'd go for these things you're better off without.
She wasn't like that.
What was she like?
She had brains. She should have gone to the university. She liked reading. Books and that.
What do you do?
Apprentice engineer.
Is this the first time you've been in this flat?
Been here 3 times before.
Uh-huh.
I hate this place.
How about a lady called Julia?
I hate her, too.
That's interesting.
Huh? Well, what's interesting about it?
You don't dig tall, good-looking, attractive women.
Sandra went mad about her.
Oh?
We were sitting in a coffee bar this night, me and Sandra. We got chatting up this fellow we used to see in there. He said he was going to a party and how's about coming along.
And the party was here.
Some party. Layabouts all over the place. Drinking Italian wine and listening to weird music and talking about religion and sex and that. Oh, they were all actors and actresses and painters and writers, they said. But in my book there were layabouts.
And that was Sandra's first time here as well.
Yes. She went a bundle on it.
Maybe that was what you wanted.
No, not her. It was this Julia dazzled her. Sandra started imitating her hairstyle and her clothes and the way she walked and talked and everything.
And the way she thought?
Yes.
Was that what split you up?
Yes. See, I got on to her about these parties and this stuff they smoked and her staying out all night and things, and she said...
What did she say?
She said, my mind was as twisted as my leg.
She learned fast from Julia. And when did you meet Tom Armstrong?
A balloon. A big balloon.
We've already established that. When did they meet?
About 6 months ago.
And out went you.
She came back to me. When she was in trouble, she came back to me.
Oh, big deal.
Well, she did. Why couldn't he leave her alone? Him and his big car and his panloaf accent and his money. Why couldn't he stay on his own side of the tracks?
I could tell you, but it would take too long.
Anyway, she came back to me in the end.
Oh, sure. You've got her now, forever and ever. Amen. She's yours and she's dead and long gone. And no big bad wolf is ever going to take her away again.
I've had about enough of you.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
And he's still going to get the message.
Oh, mazel tov.
Oh, he's going to get it all right. And when he gets it, no girl will ever look at him as long as he lives. If he lives.
He went limping off. Happy now because his insufferable suffering had finally found a justification that would last him all his life. It was getting to be dawn, and the east was the color of dirty ointment. I switched off the light and sprawled down in an armchair. I remember buying it. In the shop it had been very, very Sunday supplement, but by the time I'd carried it home, it was already obsolete. Now it was comfortably old hat. And I fell asleep. I awoke to bright, hard, cold yellow sunlight and a policeman staring down at me mournfully.
Good morning.
Inspector Wardlaw.
I took the liberty of letting myself in.
Why not? Everybody else does it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful flat. Lovely big rooms.
That's because it's old. In the old days, they thought parochially and built spaciously. Now we think in terms of space and build rabbit hutches.
Yes, indeed.
Did you drink coffee?
It is my one addiction.
Come on into the kitchen. I'll give you a fix.
Coffee through a hypodermic. What'll they think of next? Ah, very nice. Mrs. Beaton would have approved.
Julia and I always thought big. Now, where's that percolator? Oh, here we are.
You had a daughter, had you not, Maxon?
Yes.
What became of her?
You're standing on the edge of a punch in the mouth.
Why would I be doing that now, Maxon?
Don't start being clever, Inspector.
I was merely asking you a question.
Who are you insulting? If you know I had a daughter, then you have to know what happened to her.
You're not a very admirable character, Maxon. You could dish it out to that poor wee man at the coffee stall last night, but you're not very good at taking it.
So sue me.
I understand your daughter was drowned.
You tell me. You probably know more about it than I do.
Now, how could that be?
I was abroad when it happened. Nobody knew my address. I only got to know about it months later.
Who broke the news?
Julia's mother.
How did she know where you were?
I wrote to her to let her know where I'd finally settled down.
Why?
Because I'm very fond of her.
Where does your mother-in-law live?
28 Sangster Crescent, South Side.
Uh-huh. Her name?
Mrs. Helen Duncan. Do you intend to go and see her?
I might just do that.
I might just come with you.
Why?
She's an old woman, Inspector. You might frighten her.
I would not do that willingly. But you can be there if it eases your mind.
When?
Well, I should probably be there about 7 o'clock.
It's a date.
Your daughter's death was quite a straightforward accident.
Has anyone ever suggested it wasn't?
People sometimes get strange ideas into their heads. They brood and worry.
I worry because I wasn't there. That's what worries me. She died and I wasn't there. They buried her and I wasn't there.
There was a crowd of them staying at a cottage. It was a beautiful moonlight night and they decided to go for a sail about midnight. There were too many of them in the wee boat and it capsized. Your daughter was drowned and so was a young man called Walter Templeton.
All right. So my daughter died by moonlight. So that makes everything all right.
When I was a boy, there was a book I once got as a Sunday school prize. And there was this story in the book which stuck in my mind.
It has a moral, of course.
It was about a Hindu woman whose only son, a superlative child, had died. She was inconsolable and liked to kill herself in her grief. Indeed, it affected her mind to the extent that she went to a wise man and asked him what she must do to have her child restored to life again.
What did he tell her?
He told her to go around the village until she found a house that death had not visited. When she found such a house, she was to beg a piece of bread from the family. This piece of bread she was to place on the dead lips of her son, and he would come back to life again.
Did she make it?
There was no such house in the village. And suddenly she realized there was no such house anywhere. And she also realized what the wise man had meant her to realize. That it is an arrogance to think that the gods single out any one individual for special persecution.
You did that rather well.
Thank you.
Not a dry seat in the house.
You have promised us a statement this morning.
Oh, let me get myself presentable. I'll go right down and make it.
Just so. Oh, thank you for the coffee.
Thank you for the parable.
Yes.
Something else bothering you?
Oh, it's a little question that was nagging at my mind.
Ask it.
I keep wondering why that poor girl chose to kill herself in this flat.
In the fullness of time, I went down to the police station and made my statement. It was pretty basic, like I walked into my flat and found an unknown girl dead. How basic can you get? I walked through the daylight city. It had changed. It was acquiring the bogus cosmopolitan bit. All one-way streets and Chinese restaurants and mosaic shop fronts. The kind of buildings you can see anywhere and everywhere. The kind that Arthur Koestler describes as Esperanto architecture. Just off Queen Street, there was a familiar building. Inside the entrance, a board on the wall informed me that on the third floor, I would find Ebenezer Armstrong and Son, novelty goods. I walked up the stairs to a door emblazoned with the same legend. A girl looked up as I entered. She was about 16, and what is known technically as a scrubber.
Can I help you?
The boss in?
You mean Mr. Tom?
That's right. Not Mr. Dick, not Mr. Harry. Mr. Tom.
You're a right wee comic.
Does it show?
You a traveller?
Sort of.
Mr. Tom's busy.
He'll see me.
I'll ask him. What's the name?
Nemesis.
Mr. Nemesis. I'll see if he'll see you.
She jiggled into his office in a skirt that was tighter than a tourniquet. I could visualize him looking up with his make-and-break charm. I could remember the office, the two telephones he didn't need, the model mosquito aircraft on the desk, the print on the wall. It would be Bruegel's Hunters in the Snow. The greatest picture ever painted, he always said. He was the type that always, always said things. Everything about him was bogus. He was a bogus human, a bogus aesthete, a bogus businessman, a bogus lover. Then the scrubber came back in that skirt that was tighter than three Hogmanays and told me I could go in. He didn't look up immediately.
I'm sure the girl must have got the name wrong.
She didn't.
Johnny Maxson,
Let's not shake hands or anything hypocritical like that.
Johnny Maxson, how are you, old boy?
You're getting fat.
Not me, Johnny, old comrade. Still look after the old shape, what? Regular exercise, Turkish baths, careful diet.
Young girls?
That's hardly a careful diet, old boy.
You could be so right.
How's the world abusing you?
Can't complain, I do, but I shouldn't.
Are you writing?
No.
Oh, Johnny, Johnny, what a criminal waste of talent.
I know, I've let the side down.
But you are such a brilliant writer, Johnny.
Where's Julia?
Look, old boy.
Where is she?
Now, how should I know where Julia is?
Who would know better?
You still haven't forgotten, have you?
No.
How can a man be jealous of the things a woman does before she even meets him?
Every man is.
Oh, come now.
I took Julia away from you, remember? But she wouldn't let you go, you and the others. She liked having all her ex-conquests around her. Walking scalps.
Now, listen.
Some of them got a rush of self-respect to the head and drifted away, but not you. You stayed around worshipping. That's why you're the most likely person to know where she is now.
I don't know where she is. I give you my word of honor.
Dib, dib, dib. When did you last see her?
Months ago. We had lunch together. I can give you the exact date. It's in my appointments diary.
Let's have it. Exact.
October, October, October. Here we are. Friday the 23rd. Julia, lunch, Bradley's.
Anything unusual about her behavior that day?
No.
You came back here in the afternoon.
Oh, for heaven's
sake. Did you?
Of course I did. I had three more appointments. Look for yourself.
Did she mention where she was going after she left you?
No. What the devil is this all about?
Don't bother your pretty little head.
You're trash, Johnny. Trash.
I know. And you're in trouble.
If it's anything to do with Julia...
I think maybe it has.
If you stop being cryptic and mysterious...
A girl called Sandra Bailey killed herself last night in Julia's flat.
I don't believe you.
It's true. You're in shtuk, my fine phony friend. Dead shtuk. And it's later than you think. I left him, looking at ghosts present, past, and to come. The crowded streets were bitterly cold, and a sadistic little wind whipped everyone, impartially. I took a bus and went to see Julia's mother.
You look tired, Johnny.
I am.
Have you eaten?
I never eat, remember?
Let me cook something for you.
No, no, thank you.
Is your girl in Paris a good cook?
The greatest.
What's her name?
Solange.
What a pretty name.
She's a very pretty girl.
I'd like to meet her.
I think you'd get on well together.
Tell me about her.
You're really asking if she's like Julia.
All right, then. Is she?
No.
Completely different?
No, darling, no. I haven't done the pendulum reaction thing.
I'm glad. That's always unfair.
She's a very practical girl, Solange. She laughs a lot, at herself and at me. You've no idea how refreshing that is. It makes me feel real.
Didn't you get that feeling from Julia?
No. No, Julia had me cast as the big writer, the genius. She was the keeper of the sacred flame. That was too much. Somewhere behind the images, two human beings shriveled to bits.
Why don't you want to marry your French girl?
Oh, I don't know. Yes, yes, I do. I'm scared.
Scared of what?
It's something to do with a broken marriage.
Post-operative shock.
A sense that you've failed in a human relationship. And with no guarantee that it wouldn't happen again. You know the most wonderful thing about Solange?
What?
She doesn't really need me.
Then she doesn't love you.
Oh, who needs love? It's only the first step towards an overdose of sleeping pills.
Oh, that poor girl. Did they find out who she was?
Her name was Sandra Bailey.
I never heard Julia mention her.
Well, that's strange. Apparently she had a big thing about Julia.
Julia never mentioned her.
This girl was going to have a baby.
Oh,
yes.
No.
Another thing, the police found a reefer in the line of her jacket.
A reefer?
A marijuana cigarette.
Oh, sometimes I feel I've lived too long, Johnny.
The police are coming here, Helen. And Inspector Wardlaw, to be precise, he thinks that Julia's mixed up in something rather messy.
But that's ridiculous.
Not from where he stands.
You haven't told him anything, have you, Johnny?
Oh, you know me. If I had two watches, I wouldn't tell a policeman the time.
I'll tell him nothing either.
What could you tell him, Helen? What do you know that you won't even tell me?
The telephone. Hello? Yes? Yes? Who's speaking? Just a moment. It's for you, Johnny.
Oh, coming.
Who is it?
Inspector Wardlaw.
Oh, hello, Inspector. Yes?
Yes. Yes, of course. I'll leave right now.
What is it, Johnny?
He wants me to meet him at the police station.
Did he say why, Johnny? Did he? Did he?
Yes.
Why does he want you along there, Johnny?
He says he has a body in the mortuary he wants me to identify.
Third part of The Same River Twice, a serial in 8 parts by Edward Boyd, was produced for the BBC by Eddie Fraser.